This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Carrie McDermott. She is the Senior Policy Director for West Health Policy Center. Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well and happy to join you today.
I seem to be in a rut talking about healthcare IT, so I thought I'd drag you in here and talk it from a different perspective. A couple weeks back, we had the CIO of CMS on the air, Tony Trenkel. And, I mean, he's this is a guy that's got to be like an octopus. He's in all kinds of different areas, 175 data centers to manage, all kinds of mandates, all kinds of issues. The CMS has an $800 million budget. I mean, it's really immense. And we had a perspective from the top, maybe from the top of the pyramid, looking down on managing healthcare IT. I thought I'd bring in someone from a different perspective, maybe more a lower-level perspective of how it interacts with listeners and citizens. And that's why I thought we'd bring you in and talk about healthcare IT and mobile devices and some of the things that Tony's interested in, put him in working boots and talk to you about some of that. But before we begin, some of our listeners are scratching their heads saying, well, geez, Carrie, where are you from and how'd you get involved in this and why'd you wind up with West Health Policy Center?
Sure. Well, my background is in finance, consulting, and education. I spent a few years on the payer side at one of the national health insurers, and I had the pleasure of serving as the healthcare director at the Federal Communications Commission before joining West last summer to help launch their policy efforts in D.C. And the West Health Policy Center is part of a broader initiative called the West Health Initiative, and we are founded by private citizens Gary and Mary West for the sole purpose of lowering the cost of healthcare. What Gary and Mary have done is taken a big picture look at all the pieces you need in place to create a low-cost ecosystem. So they first founded an institute in San Diego that is a medical research organization focused on coming up with new innovations, new low-cost solutions. In the course of that work, they came across numerous startups that also have great ideas for lowering the cost of healthcare, but can't get any access to capital. So in the fall, they launched the West Health Investment Fund to provide startup capital to those companies. And then a third and very important piece of this is getting the rules of the road right in Washington. In order for these innovations to see the light of day and get to the patients that need them, we have to make sure that we are paying for the right things and that we have the right regulatory rules on the books so they can make it. So that's what I'm here to help them do. And, you know, we have an ambitious goal with the Policy Center. We'd like to find $100 billion in healthcare cost savings within the next 10 years.
Well, so would I, so would Tony, and I would think most of our listeners would too. I mean, no one wants to overpay for anything, and everyone wants to take and use technology increasingly to save money. I think this is the big crossover, you know? You get a lot of people who spend their whole lives, they're CISSPs, and they know everything about TCP/IP, then they get to the top of the heat, and then have to worry about policy concerns and mobile devices and security, and that's really a hot topic. I want to bring that up before we get too involved in this. But some of the issues that West Health wants to take a look at are some of the same issues that CMS and the FDA and CDC, they're all struggling with, is infrastructure, transparency, making sure the reimbursements are done effectively, looking at regulation, looking at reducing duplicate information. So a lot of crossovers between what your goal is in your organization and I think federal CIOs and healthcare ITs as well. And I hit the top here of mobile devices. Let's talk a little bit more about mobile devices. Everyone wants to know, everyone's listening, probably using a mobile device as they're listening.
Right, absolutely.
So where does the West Health fit with mobile and where do you see mobile fitting in?
Sure. Well, you know, as you mentioned, a big thing that we espouse is infrastructure independent care. And that means providing patients with the right care at the right time, wherever they are, whenever they need it. And there's smart technology that can enable this and further care coordination. You know, when we think about today's system, it's very much oriented around the clinician and the clinician's location and the clinician's availability. And we end up responding to patients once they're in a health crisis, as opposed opposed to managing them continuously. So mobile devices and applications allow us to do a better job of monitoring a condition and being in front of problems. You know, the body is giving off signals that it's in duress long before we can recognize them. So much better to catch that in advance. And when we think about this infrastructure independent care, there's really a few building blocks. And that, you know, we think about wireless infrastructure. It has to be ubiquitous. So working at the Federal Communications Commission, obviously having smart spectrum policy is important. And spectrum is a finite resource that has to support a lot of things. So we have to be very mindful of how we allocate it. We have to find new and improved ways of sharing it. And we need smarter devices that can do a better job of accessing it. And the FCC is really doing a lot to push that work forward. And then, of course, sensors are a key component to infrastructure independent care. You know, these sensors are measuring any multitude of biometric values and, again, alerting us to those problems before they become a crisis. We also have to think about advanced analytics. So we're generating so much data from so many sources. And if we can take that data from sensors and our subjective assessments of patient risk factors and actually turn that into actionable knowledge and real decision support for both providers and patients alike. And then a third important area that we talk about are data sets. You know, we have so much information at individual and population levels that we can mine so that we're continually enhancing the detection, assessment, and management of a wide array of medical conditions.
You know, Carrie, you're kind of humble. I don't think the listeners realize you would know more about your background. You've worked in the commercial world, you've worked at the FCC, and you also have an advanced degree from Yale in public health, right? A master's of public health.
I do.
So you can look at it from the academic perspective, from the payer, the payee, and the policy perspective. So it's a great perspective. I think many times people like me are locked into a little IT world and big data and the cloud and Hadoop. And wait a minute, what about the person in Idaho just wants to know if she's sick or not? And mobile can help in connecting with her. It can also help with doctors in hospitals. And mm-hmm. I think the acronym of the month is BYOD, which stands for bring your own device.
Absolutely. And there's mixed reactions to that. You know, when we think about trying to manage wireless devices inside the hospital, that is a huge challenge for the CIOs and CTOs. You know, it's like opening up a highway with no controls on it. So one of the projects that has been worked on at the West Wireless Health Institute is a reference architecture for configuring wireless within the hospital. You know, because it is so important that when I'm visiting my mom in the hospital, that my smartphone works, that the hospital can conduct its business wirelessly, and that all those devices that are monitoring patients are getting the data moved where it needs to be. And there are more and more things that are becoming unplugged in the hospital and lots of new devices being introduced. And it juxtaposed just managing the spectrum, you know, the actual airwave infrastructure in the hospital, there are numerous concerns around privacy and security. How do we make sure that we're maintaining all of this? And as you know, and your listeners probably know, the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT is paying a lot of attention to privacy and security right now. They're holding some forums on it, and they're actually seeking public comment through the end of March on how do we best maintain the security on mobile devices.
It's right top of mind. If you pick up Network World from February, and you see security managers remain skeptical of BYOD, the very first example they use is Kaiser Permanente. Well, here it is, healthcare IT mm-hmm. and mobile. And the concerns are physicians are interested in mobile devices to provide services in a more timely fashion, more effective. I mean, surveys will show you that 85% of hospitals are embracing BYOD, but what flavor of BYOD and what depth? And I think that's what my listeners are challenged with, you know? They come from an IT background, and they're put in a policy position where, okay, what mobile devices are you going to allow in your hospital? What mm-hmm. about your agency? What about your secure agency? What about maybe a civilian agency? You may have different types of regulations for each level there.
Right. And, you know, there's really not a right or wrong answer here. I think the important thing is to maintain a consistent approach. We've learned about hospital systems that are going to one extreme, providing the devices and iPads for every doc, whereas others say, no, we're not going to issue a single one, but we'll support whatever you bring in. But, you know, what this all boils down to is thinking about the information that we're getting and what we're doing with that information and how we're using these devices. So we know that about 50% of doctors use tablets and about 80 plus percent have smartphones. And, you know, there's a difference between using it in their personal life versus their professional practice. And some of them are using these items for medical reference material. Other ways, it's supporting decision support tools. You know, there's too much knowledge out there for just one person to process. And then they can be used for patient education. If I'm about to undergo a procedure, wouldn't it be great to see a video and have a doctor talk me through that, you know, on their iPad? And then there's the use of getting alerts from monitors and alarms. But whatever happens with this, all this information has to be incorporated into treatment plans, and the processes have to become part of a regular workflow.
It's incredible. 5 years ago, no one talked about this, and now it's top of mind. In fact, Apple is talking about having 100 million installed devices by the end of the year. It's incredible. I can't believe it. And if it can help a doctor, I'm all for it. However, I understand the security aspects of this as well. Let's take a break when we get back, talk about meaningful use, and maybe all about analytics and big data in regards to healthcare IT. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Kerry McDermott, Senior Policy Director, West Health Policy Center.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to Fed Talk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Tony Vernetti will be joined by guests from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the Association of Federal External Civil Rights Specialists to hear about recent EEOC issues and events.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Hey, Caps fans! On the move but need your Caps info? Then download the official Caps mobile app to your Android, iPhone, or BlackBerry. With the Caps mobile app, you can follow the game with real-time scores and stats and access news, photos, podcasts, videos, and Twitter feeds anytime, anywhere. To download, text Caps app to 43803 or log on to WashingtonCaps.com. Stay Caps connected with Caps mobile.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. While many people welcome the change from winter to spring, there are others who are less enthusiastic.
Probably 20% have some kind of seasonal allergy.
An asthma and allergy specialist, Mayo Clinic Dr. James Lee, says now is the time of year to be proactive. Check with your physician, discuss the medications you're using, especially if you had troubles the previous year. Also,
when spring comes, it's beautiful weather, but what I tell my patients is, you know, in the spring, if someone has spring allergies, if they're opening the windows and they get that nice fresh spring breeze into the home, they're probably getting all the clouds of pollen into the home as well.
As much as possible, Dr. Lee advises keeping the doors and windows closed, and running a ventilation system can also help quite a bit. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Carrie McDermott, Senior Policy Director at an organization called West Health Policy Center. If you'd like to play along at home, if you want to get more information, their website is westhealthpolicy.org. Three words, westhealthpolicy.org. Get more information on the organization. What they're trying to do is they're trying to look at ways to save money on healthcare. They have a very specific plan on how to do this. And Carrie has an interesting experience both in the federal government, the commercial world, and academia. And we're talking about all kinds of things. We start off with mobile. I want to talk about this big fancy pants word that most people care less about. And the word in your world is meaningful use. Now, I'll give you 5 hours to define that, and then I'll pull the plug on you. So what the heck is meaningful use?
Thanks. So, you know, meaningful use is all about improving the healthcare system. And right now, CMS and ONC have put out some rules and guidelines that are intended to be a dialogue about how we actually gather information, get it to the right people, and do something useful with it. So it's all about not having technology for technology's sake, but having technology to really support the things we care about, like the triple aim that CMS has laid out, you know, better care, improved health outcomes, all at lower cost.
A couple weeks ago, there was a conference out in Las Vegas where 30,000 people were, I think, taking swords and shields and fighting over defining meaningful use. This is what it is. This is what it isn't. I think there was something called Stage 2 came out with like 400 or 500 pages attempting to define it. I mean,
Are you telling me you haven't read Stage 2? Come on.
I was up till midnight last night reading page 443. I mean, wow.
Right.
I mean, this is a pretty difficult topic to define,
sure.
And maybe you can explain why and how this fits in with healthcare IT and the federal government.
Sure. Well, as we think about trying to be transformative, you have to take it in stages. So we've had stage one. That's what folks are attesting to now. Recent data has come out that about 2,000 hospitals and more than 41,000 doctors have met the standards for stage one meaningful use, and they've actually received over $3 billion in federal incentive payments. And then stage two is really emphasizing actual data exchange. So not just testing the parameters, but proving that you can execute on that. And it will also require clinicians to adopt more advanced care processes and clinical decision support, as well as engaging patients. And patient engagement is a key part of this. You know, if we can just think for a minute about some of the cost challenges with the healthcare system, you know, we really have to start with the individual, the fact that we need to do a better job of taking care of ourselves and maintaining our individual health. There's a lot of technology solutions that can help us along the way. We also have to look at the system holistically. We have exactly what we've incentivized for. You know, we need to change how we pay for care and focus on value. And value is really a combination of cost and quality that's assessed quite differently by each of us. And I'd say there's also a need for more science-based evidence so physicians and their patients can better understand the choices they have to make. So when we think about meaningful use, the electronic health record is a technology tool here that can aid in capturing the right information about patients, making sure the treating clinicians have it when they need it and have what they need, and embedding decision support tools so that, you know, when a patient presents, there might be multiple treatment options available for their specific condition. And how do you weigh those against each other, you know, as far as what's right for that unique patient. And that's what we're trying to get toward.
If you read the statistics on electronic health records, about a third of doctors are using those. More and more doctors seem to be comfortable with meaningful use. I mean, they're not doing it out of the goodness of the hearts, are they? I mean, the reason they're doing it in order to get the money. I mean, show me the money,
well,
right?
Absolutely. So, you know, the federal stimulus dollars have absolutely been rocket fuel for the electronic health record industry. And we needed something to move things. So a recent study from the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions found that physicians deem electronic health records valuable in improving quality, about 84% of them, and find them important to managing patient care, about 79%. But almost two-thirds have not actually seen yet the ability to improve diagnosis accuracy or treatment planning. And I think that speaks to the staged approach. You know, this is turning workflow on its head. You have to figure out how to integrate these systems and make it a part of your regular practice. So, you know, when you can actually catch drug interactions or find gaps in care where someone's not getting their screening or missing an immunization or something, that's good. That helps you improve quality. And it's important for keeping this great record set that to manage the overall patient. But there are absolutely challenges. You know, the reason we have the incentive program is it's very expensive to implement these things. So cost is a huge hurdle. And then the implementation itself, you know, you think about there's large systems that have IT staffs that are adept at these things, and down to the solo practitioner, you know, where your IT person is your nephew. And, you know, it can be very disruptive to the workflow. And another concern is that there's no sense automating a bad process or becoming more efficient at doing the wrong thing. So it's not just about, you know, getting the technology in there. It's about making sure we're doing the right things. And other concerns that we hear in the clinician community worry about are vendor selection. There are so many EHR options out there. How do you know which one is right for you? How do you know if the guy you bought from is still going to be in business? And when I have a question 2 years down the line, are they around to support me? And then, you know, we never get away from the concern around the privacy of the data and the information. And then again, the incentives, you know, are they enough? I think it's inevitable that we are moving in the direction of collecting the data, moving it where it needs to be, and doing something meaningful with it.
We had the folks from LexisNexis in a couple weeks back. They have a website called Fraud of the Day. And you go there and you see prisoners who are getting unemployment checks. And right. A lot of this fraud is connected to healthcare IT. And I, you know, when I think about, you know, Fraud of the Day, it's entertaining and hilarious until you realize the amount of millions of dollars there. And all of a sudden it circles back to West Health and they're saying, no, we want to have a rational reimbursement policy. We want value for any medical dollars that go out the door. And it crosses, I mean, this is layer on top of layer. This is crosses over with meaningful use, electronic health records. So electronic health records can also assist in the area of rational reimbursement and accountable care solutions, can it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny that you mention fraud and abuse and, you know, all these things going on in the system. When we think about the cost drivers, that's certainly a major one, waste, inefficiency, and the fraud. Thomson Reuters just put out a study suggesting that price transparency could save $36 billion a year. And when they look at some of the cases for healthcare waste, they actually quantify fraud and abuse costing anywhere from $125 to $175 billion.
Yeah, with a B.
B. Yeah, I mean, that's big money. And, you know, we think that it's not happening, but it sadly is. And it's a small portion. But the recent headlines, you know, we've seen CMS and the Department of Justice crack down on physicians in Texas who are having, you know, making hundreds of billions of dollars off of defrauding the Medicare system. And, you know, we are in a cost crisis. These dollars are precious. The last thing we should be doing is having them wasted in that manner.
No doubt about price transparency. When I had the fellow on, he said he did a site called Fraud of the Day. I said, you could probably do Fraud of the Hour every hour of the day, because many people are sincerely interested in executing your jobs well and try to figure out fraud. And I think healthcare IT is a great place to start. Transparency is something that hits on a lot of levels. I mean, consumers want to have the charges transparent. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, if you interoperate, some of that data has to be transparent, but some of it has to be carefully controlled too. So this isn't like working at a garage where you're controlling, you know, starters or alternators. You know, these are human beings. They have very sensitive medical records. So this adds a degree of complexity that most organizations don't have.
Definitely. And, you know, price transparency is an area that's receiving a lot more emphasis right now. When we at West Health Policy Center think about that, we are talking about providing timely, easily accessible, easily understandable, and actionable price data so that consumers, patients, and their providers can actually understand the costs associated with the diagnostic, therapeutic, and routine healthcare choices that they make. You know, it is amazing that prices for the same procedure in the same market can vary by 100%. And price transparency happens at a lot of levels. As you've noted, the patient, the consumer, end user wants to know what exactly it costs to them. There's also issues between hospitals and their suppliers. So a recent GAO report was looking at the practice of gag clauses between medical device manufacturers and hospitals, saying, you know what, hospital, you may not disclose how much we sold this for, and you can't even necessarily tell the physicians that are using it. So I know, it just doesn't sound right. We are asking physicians, you know, the new guidelines for ethics say, please be parsimonious with care. How are they to make informed decisions about when I need my new knee, if there's a part that costs $500 and a part that costs $3,000 and they're the same, all else being equal? If they don't know the price, how are they supposed
okay,
to guide
Carrie,
me?
So your alternator costs $500 and charged me $800 for the same part. I mean,
yeah.
That's what transparency is all about.
Exactly. How is that? You know, and then patient, you know, it is, there's another study, also a GAO report, that was trying to find pricing information for common procedures at different hospitals. And it was very, very difficult, you know, because of how hospitals account for these things. So, you know, patients are in a quagmire.
Quagmire, parsimonious, all kinds of fancy words today. We're talking about healthcare IT with Carrie McDermott. She's a senior policy director at West Health Policy Center. And you are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Computers can search for words very quickly, but when it comes to images, our brains are much better. So engineers are exploring how we can help computers. If you're web surfing for, say, a beautiful or funny-looking picture, search engines have a tough time knowing exactly what you want. So Paul Scheide, a Columbia University biomedical engineer, is monitoring people's brain activity as he shows them pictures at the rate of 10 a second.
You might see an image and realize, ooh, that's interesting. You might not be able to then, in that fraction of a second, really describe it in detail. You just know that it caught your attention.
Scheide says a computer can then match that brain response to a picture and look for similar images.
We know what the brain is good at in terms of visual processing. We know what computers are very good at. Our goal is to create a system that leverages the advantages of both.
Such a combo might be especially useful in high-pressure situations like stock trading or military analysis, where lots of visual information must be analyzed quickly. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning, NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Well, the Howard B. Owen Science Center in nearby Greenbelt, Maryland, they've got a great event coming up on March 23rd, and it's free. It's a fun family science night from 6 to 8:30 p.m. You can learn to separate myth from reality in a bunch of investigations and planetarium experiences, and even a simulated trip to Mars. Google Howard B. Owen Science Center. That's the easiest way to find out more.
And we can actually do a little advance planning for a getaway this time of year, can't we?
Well, this is a great time to plan for later, and there's a really unusual opportunity coming up on Sunday, March the 25th. You can go out to Shenandoah County. You can get in on an open house that they're having throughout the county. Lots of their B&Bs and lodges are having open houses. And the unusual part about it is that there are all kinds of other activities taking place on the grounds of the accommodations. Find out more about all of this on page 38 of the March Recreation News, or, of course, at recreationnews.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Carrie McDermott, Senior Policy Director for West Health Policy Center. For more information, you can go to the website. What's the website, Carrie?
Westhealthpolicy.org.
That's good. And I don't think they have a blog, but I have a blog. My blog is called the Tech Tuesday Blog, and I'll be blogging about this interview and saying all kinds of rotten things about Carrie. So oh. I would definitely try to find what that's all about.
I will be sure to comment.
Oh, no. Before we took a break, we talked about a lot of different things and talked about costs and overlaying costs. And I think if you look at healthcare IT, you get duplicate systems. Obviously, in databases, you have deduplicators. But guess what? Healthcare IT, there's duplicate charges, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a concern. If you're going to eliminate fraud, well, maybe this isn't intentional fraud. Maybe it goes from fraud to just a mistake. But sometimes you'll have duplicate tests, duplicate charges, and this can be a big cost for healthcare IT, and IT folks can try to figure this out.
No, absolutely. We, you know, one of the things that we focus on is appropriate care utilization. And a lot of that is identifying where things are wasteful, costly, and that unnecessary or duplicate spending. And, you know, another challenge we have is that patients and caregivers often don't understand the limitations and capabilities of diagnostic and treatment options. And that leads to having these broadly held and somewhat irrational expectations for care. So when we look at cost drivers, if we take that coupled with the practice of defensive medicine and other perverse incentives, we are really driving medical overuse. And we can use technology to find a way to track and monitor that. You know, so why are certain physicians predisposed to certain prescribing patterns? You know, and it's not about going after bad guys. It's about continuous improvement, just finding things that we could be doing better in the system and accessing information where we maybe didn't have it before.
Many of my listeners are quite familiar with acronyms. I mean, federal IT professionals know more acronyms than anyone else. Here's an acronym for you, ACA in the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Maybe my listeners have heard about this and have concerns and questions. And where does that fit in with healthcare IT and policy? Tell us about the ACA, please.
Sure. So ACA is the Accountable Care Act. And this, of course, was healthcare reform that was passed in March of 2010. And, you know, most of the focus on that was really on insurance reform and in making sure that we're expanding coverage to bring all Americans into the system. And what a piece of that that's been rather contentious is an individual mandate that individuals have health care insurance. And that is before the Supreme Court. We expect there'll be arguments, I think, later this month. And then in June, there should be a decision. And, you know, what their ruling will do will address issues of federal versus state governance. But, you know, regardless of how it's settled, we are still going to be talking about healthcare reform and the need for new payment models. And their outcome will merely influence how we address the crisis. You know, healthcare costs are a problem today. They're going to be a problem throughout the rest of this year, throughout the election. They're going to be a problem after the Supreme Court rules. So what we really have to do is start thinking about what are the solutions.
One interesting fact that that I learned last week, and I'm still stunned by, I can't believe it, by the end of 2012, there'll be more mobile devices on the planet than humans.
Wow.
So my conclusion is dogs will have cell phones. I mean, I don't know how to conclude this. But
I mean, I have at least two. So.
And so there's going to be a lot of mobile devices out there. I'll have a bunch of them. You'll have the physicians will have them, too. Physicians will generate data with a lot of these devices. And inevitably, there's little vacuum cleaners out there called databases that scoop up this data. Mm-hmm. And now we're having a problem with big data and big data. Right, exactly on the head. Analytics, big data, finding outliers, and finding about, you know, duplicates through outliers, finding out about transparency through large databases. So big data is another hot topic for, I think, everyone concerned with healthcare IT, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the more data you can have, presumably, the more you can do with it. You know, there are a lot of areas where we are lacking an evidence base. And in order to have evidence, you need to generate data. And when we think about cost and places that do a good job and places that do a bad job, well, I'll say not bad, but a less favorable outcome, you know, what we find is that the best care does not actually come from the costliest, which is a good thing, because if it did, we would really be in big trouble. So there are these pockets that are getting, you know, using technology, really behaving in teams and working like systems to drive good outcomes. And what we need to do is learn from those pockets what they're doing and scale that. And technology is the great enabler for scaling. You know,
I was thinking about scaling and technology allows you to take a look at a lot of that big data differently than you could before. We didn't have the ability to collect something for an evidence-based decision.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
You know, when people started talking about broadband, they talked about a need for speed. I think it's from a movie years ago. But now we're moving into the area where it's there's a thirst for data. People want to know. They want to know all kinds of information. And before the show, we talked about this thing called quantified self and Fitbit. What are these terms? I'm not sure what they are.
Sure. Well, so the quantified self is a movement. I think it's out of Southern California. And it's really about self-management through data. So whether you want to, and it's groups, it's bringing together folks who are creating tools to use the information or track your information and using your information and best practices. So if I want to be tracking my weight, my sleep, my diet, my exercise, my mood, I mean, we could quantify basically anything about ourselves. And there's obviously a range, a continuum where folks want to know absolutely everything, where they are, you know, analyzing their saliva down to every last protein versus the people who, like me, you know, I'm a cyclist. I wear a heart rate monitor when I'm exercising. That's about the extent of it. But, you know, the kids are addicted to pedometers, which is great. So there's this range of things that we can be doing to measure for ourselves. And I think that's an important way for getting people more engaged. Because at the end of the day, until we have a little bit more responsibility and accountability for our individual health and start making, you know, the right health choices, you know, we didn't get to an obesity epidemic accidentally. You know, we understand high caloric intake. We know that there's a lack of physical activity. So if a pedometer can get you motivated to get 10,000 steps a day, then you're up and walking around. And if I asked you, how many steps a day do you walk? You may not know. I have no idea. I might be shocked if I put it on. I think I'm pretty active, but, you know, as soon as you're working at home, you know, the big commute is from the home office to the refrigerator, you know, and that's a problem.
The catchphrase I use with my kids is, in order to be terrific, you got to be specific, and you got to specifically know what your fitness plan is and what goals you want to set along the way to hit in order to implement that. Different topic. Let's go back to healthcare IT, talk more about security and privacy. The security and privacy issues are just replete in this whole issue of healthcare IT in the federal government. I mean, let's just start off with the information itself. I mean, all the information that's being gathered at CMS or all the different agencies, and there's hundreds of hospitals there. It all has to be secure. And this has got to be a problem in and of itself in trying to interoperate and use that data with different types of health information exchanges. That's kind of going to be a key problem here, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so, you know, security, I think of as more of the technical aspect and privacy as the policy question. You know, privacy has to do with who's involved in seeing that data, what data, and under what circumstances. Security is making sure that it can transmit without anybody hacking into it or getting lost. And, you know, we know that a lot of security breaches come from simple things like folks losing their non-encrypted laptop. So there's a lot of human behavior elements. But if we think about other other industries have solved these issues. The financial services industry, you know, defense, there are actually sound security and privacy processes and procedures in place. So we need to do a better job, I think, of trying to mirror them and learn from them. But it's worrisome. If I'm a doctor and you reach out to me and say, I'm seeing this patient, send me their information, you know, there has to be something that establishes the trust. We need an electronic handshake. And that's exactly what, you know, ONC is working on as they think about the standards and interoperability framework that supports health information exchanges, things like that.
And if you get out your little Twitter and you find out what trending phrases are, one of the trending phrases is HIE. I mean, here's a hashtag, HIE, another hashtag, health IT, hashtag EMR, health hashtag medical jobs, hashtag health apps. I mean, these are very important subjects for just about all of our listeners. There's going to be mobile devices out there. You want information. Well, the physician has an obligation to transfer that to you in a safe and efficient manner. And where does the HEI fit in? And what are the standards for that? Now, when you were at FCC and FDA, did you work with any of that or did you work with HIE?
We did. So from the FCC perspective, that's making sure that the underlying infrastructure to support everything we're trying to do with health information technology is available. You know, with health information exchanges, the HIEs, you know, we're seeing a bit of a shift in that. The original model around the nationwide health information exchange was more hub and spoke, and now it's moving to more internet-based and involving private enterprise. And, you know, it's really important, I think, to have both because sustainability is a key concern. And there are business model issues as well. You know, folks have to be persuaded about the value of trading information, and it requires a lot of partners to trade with. So standardization is a key aspect of actually facilitating that change. And, you know, ONC knows that the current rates of exchange are low, and they're working to reduce the cost, complexity, and risk of doing so.
We're going to have to take a quick break. We can come back, talk more about healthcare IT and some of the policy implications here. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Carrie McDermott, Senior Policy Director at an organization called West Health Policy Center.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal managers say they feel left out of key discussions between agency leaders and employees' unions. At some agencies, they're not invited to forums meant to encourage cooperation between management and labor groups, but they're the ones who have to carry out many of the decisions that come from those meetings. They gave Office of Personnel Management Director John Barry an earful recently at the Federal Managers Association Conference in Washington.
The beginning of another year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, provides a free online protection quiz and needs analysis worksheet to help you determine if your family has the right amount of life insurance coverage. Visit waepa.org to learn more. Once again, that's waepa.org.
Looking to rent or buy in Northern Virginia? Attend the 2012 Northern Virginia Housing Expo, Saturday, March 24th at Arlington's Washington Lee High School. This event is free and open to the public and features 60 exhibitors, including the local housing authorities, property managers, lenders, realtors, mortgage companies, and more. You'll also find workshops on Are You Ready to Rent? And Are You Ready to Buy? Credit scores and home financing. More information available at NovaHousingExpo.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
On the move but need your Caps info? Caps Mobile lets you use your mobile phone to stay connected to the Caps. Receive breaking news and special offers by text message. Check live scores and stats with a Caps Mobile app. Enter Text to Win contest for great Caps prizes and much more. To join the Caps Mobile Club, text CAPS to 43803 now. For more info on all Caps Mobile offerings, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCaps.com. Stay Caps connected with Caps Mobile.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Nominations for the third annual COSY Award are now being accepted. If you're wondering who could be nominated, check out our past winners. 2011, Treasury's Deborah Vest streamlined HR Connect's onboard system to reduce paperwork, time, and improve accuracy to the process of bringing new employees into the agency. Nominate someone in your office who you think has made a difference helping people work better and smarter. Don't delay. Nominations for the third annual Causey Award close Friday, April 6th. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search Causey Award.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Carrie McDermott, Senior Policy Director for West Health Policy Center. If you'd like to get more information about her organization, you can follow her on Twitter at West Health Pol, P-O-L. Is that correct?
That's it.
And if you want to follow me, you can follow me at Ray Gilray, because some Irish guy took my name, at John Gilroy. I'll have to go over and get him somehow or other. So at West Health Pol, you can see all kinds of interesting trending topics. We touched on real quickly the FCC and FDA and your role there in implementing different wireless policies. Talk more about wireless and some of the nitty-gritty details that some of my technical listeners might be interested in as far as wireless testing.
Sure. So, you know, with this proliferation of wireless devices, a key concern is, do these things actually work together? So there's a need to establish wireless test beds to think about, you know, the fancy word is coexistence. How do these things operate when they are in the same environment? Are they interfering with each other? You know, if we're both patients in a waiting room on monitors, is my monitor going to knock out your monitor? That would be a bad outcome. So what the FCC and the FDA have been working together to think about, how do we go about answering these questions to make sure that these wireless devices are safe? And within the hospital, you know, again, we talked about so many things are becoming unplugged or new wireless innovations are being entered into that environment. And, you know, when you introduce something new, like a medical body area network, imagine a device on a patient that is collecting their real-time data. Once you start putting multiples of those together, how do they behave? And how does this new technology interface with the old technology, you know, the medical telemetry? Are my signals still getting where they need to be? So there's big questions around, you know, how do we go ahead and manage that? And both agencies are taking a look.
Remote monitoring devices can cross over and have problems.
They could. I mean, and these things operate, they use different parts of the airwaves, and there are very tight rules around the amount of power they're allowed to use and which frequency they behave in. But these devices are getting smart. You know, we know the airwaves are crowded, and so devices have to do a better job of recognizing, you know, where they can operate. And if their first choice is busy, they know how to jump to a second choice often. And if that gets busy, they go back to choice one or perhaps choice three. So, you know, there's a lot of work being done at the FCC around dynamic spectrum access technologies.
Speaking of technologies, I want to give you 10 questions to find out about your real tech background. There's some people listening saying, well, she knows about healthcare IT. She knows about wireless. Let's see what kind of a nerd she really is. So I want to ask these silly questions.
Oh, I'm about to be exposed.
And be exposed. Could be good or bad. We'll have to find out here. Okay, so what was the year of your first computer, when you first bought your first computer, Carrie?
You know, we had a Commodore 64 growing up.
Okay, that's the so, Wii. I want a
me,
U answer.
You know, I didn't get one until the early 90s. Undergrad.
Nothing wrong with that. Yep. And your first cell phone?
I was a holdout. I didn't actually get one until 2000, and that's because I was living in London and didn't have a choice.
Oh, la-di-da, living in London. Boy, I can press that.
And you know what's sad is when I came back in 2002, I didn't even buy my own cell phone. I just took over my mother's and have had it ever since.
When I was living in London, actually, yes, I was in a yacht.
Hey, I could have done this interview with the whole fake accent. Wouldn't that have been a treat?
Pretty impressive. And do you have your own Twitter feed?
Not my own. Okay. We're just at West Health Pol.
And your blog?
No,
you're
not my
quickly.
Own. I know.
What kind of online personal backup tools do you use?
I'm sorry, what's that?
That's not good. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone issued by work.
Okay. And number of apps on that iPhone?
You know, it's got to be under 10.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a tablet device?
I don't.
Okay.
Do I get any points if my dad's addicted to the Kindle?
No.
You know, it's because I can't get the kids off the iPad.
No, just so. When I was in London, they told us not to use that.
You told me
social
not to.
Networking sites, Facebook, LinkedIn?
Yes, double check. Thank you.
Okay. And the last book you read, was it piece of paper or was it electronic?
Oh, paper.
Well, I'll put this into my UNIVAC computer and come up with a rating, but it doesn't look good.
I'm pretty
so
sure
far.
It's rather shameful.
All the nerds listening to go, well, what kind of a nerd is she?
I'm
She's
sorry.
Not very good at all at that. So there's just no excuse.
My credibility is gone.
Let's get back, talk about healthcare IT and mobile devices. And I always ask people, well, you know, I couldn't have predicted 100 million tablets in 2012. I couldn't have predicted more cell phones than humans on the planet in 2012. And what do you predict about healthcare IT in the next 5 to 7 years? I mean, you're obviously young enough to be living through the next, you know, several cycles of where do you see it heading?
So, you know, I think that we're just going to continue to see things grow and hopefully scale. There are a lot of solutions out there. This mobile and these mobile devices are really a way of reaching new people, and especially those that have limited access and are underserved populations. So I do think that, you know, this cost crisis is going to remain a focus of the dialogue, and it will only become more dire as we need creative solutions to address the cost issue. There's a real role for IT and healthcare IT to play. You know, change is inevitable because the system is unsustainable. I also think that when we think about where the solutions are coming from, that states and local communities will be likely able to move a lot faster than federal efforts and, you know, really innovate to meet their particular challenges. And we'll continue to see new payment and delivery models, and probably a melding of the lines between payers and providers as you know, responsibility for risk changes. And what that means is that they are going to need more low-cost solutions, which will be, you know, technology-enabled care coordination, things like that, and thinking about how we can use mobile and other health IT-supported platforms to really promote team-based approaches and focus on getting the right care to each patient at the right time, you know, when they need it, wherever they are.
I know some people who are PhDs at the University of Maryland, and they work in the computer-human lab interface community there, and and they talk about trying to figure out what's going to happen down the road, and they want to be the leaders in that area. And the people at CMS have a big boatload of money they're going to give away this month in the Innovation Center, and they're trying to innovate there. And we have, obviously, people in the commercial world trying to innovate. I mean, there's a lot of innovation going on. I mean, the question is where's it going to come from? Is it going to come from the Cleveland Clinic coming up with new ways to collect data? Is it going to come from academia, maybe the folks up in Yale, your colleagues, they're going to come up with new policies or ways to do it? I mean, when who's going to be the leader? Who's going to be the follower? I think CMS wants to be the leader with innovation because they have a big pocketbook, they can fund some of that. I mean, who's gonna win in this area?
You know, I don't think it's not mutually exclusive. It's really going to come from all areas. You know, we are going to see different types of innovation can come out of places like a Cleveland Clinic or a healthcare delivery system. You know, when we think about innovative new technologies and how a lot of these folks get started, it's the traditional in your garage, you know, startup. You know, people, I think it's important to start with the clinical problem and know what you're going after and trying to solve. And we're starting to see a lot of crossover between industries. You know, obviously the telecommunication industry has taken a huge interest in healthcare and are establishing verticals there, thinking how can we use the power of what we know from communications infrastructure to advance our healthcare needs. And where the government really plays the role is it'll, you know, it's awarding money. So it's going to be making some bets and accelerating some areas. You know, at the Policy Center, we actually have private citizens who are trying to make a difference through funding us. And one of our cornerstones is a fellowship program. You know, we're offering up to $200,000 a year per fellow to accelerate academic level research that has practical outcomes for lowering the cost of healthcare. So it's our own little innovation program.
If you look at the org chart for HHS, you see all kinds of titles. Many times the titles are clinical and the other signs are IT. But I think the reason I'm even having this show is because they're both together. I mean, you can't say, I just have a clinical problem. And you say, no, I just have a, you know, tastes great, less filling, tastes great, less filling. No, they're both. I mean, healthcare IT combined.
Absolutely. They have to be. You know, we held an event at the end of January called the Care Innovation Summit. This was co-hosted between the West Wireless Health Institute, Health Affairs, and CMS. And it was all about bringing forward new care delivery and payment models that are working. And what we talk about, it gets back to these systems and, you know, having clinicians and when they were thinking about their checklists, how they created the checklist to reduce surgical deaths, they went outside of that industry saying, where do we go with other high risk, high failure points? You know, so they were bringing in Boeing engineers and other groups like that to help them come up with a new solution. So I think a lot of the healthcare solutions will come from outside of the healthcare industry.
How can it not? It has to, because sometimes you get so wrapped up in your silo, you can't see outside. Someone can look at it from a unique perspective.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Carrie McDermott, Senior Policy Director, West Health Policy Center. Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.